Welcome to the Scare Guy Show. Chestnuts are roasting, parties for hosting, Santa's ho-hoing. It can only mean one thing. Horror movies, of course. That's right. Tonight we talk about the scariest movies to watch at Christmas. This week.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
Show. Welcome to the Scare Guy Show, everybody. You're home for horror movies, conventions, haunted events, and all things scary fun. Why are we having a Scare Guy Show right here at Christmas? Because it's the best time to talk about the scariest things in your life.
And it's Friday the 13th this weekend.
Exactly. We have a special guest on the show this week who's going to talk about a special event that he has for that. Anyways, my name is Jim. I'm your managing editor. And who else do we have in the room today?
My name is Jake. I'm a filmmaker and writer.
My name is Josh Miller, and I am also a writer.
All right. So glad to have you, Josh.
There you go. Hey, everybody. I'm Ben Cleaver, actor, comedian, and people always ask me, hey, Ben, why are you drinking out of that red cup? And it's because I always say, when Ben Cleaver shows up, it's always a party.
Ben Cleaver and the party.
And I'm Cheeseman on the couch here with thescareguy.com.
All right. So glad to have everybody in the room this week. By the way, Carrie has submitted a very special video message for us this week that we're going to watch just a little bit later, not yet, and we're very excited. Carrie has been a longtime friend and
host. It looks like she's watching right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Commenting on the feed.
Carrie has
Hello,
been
Carrie.
Hey, Carrie, good to see you. She's been a longtime host and friend of the Scare Guy Show, and we're very happy that she is involved this week. Mr. Josh Miller, we
Hello.
Are so happy to have you this
I'm
week.
I'm happy to be here.
Josh and I met at Los Angeles Comic Con this past year, and he was hosting a really, really cool panel. Do you remember the name of the panel?
I remember what they were officially calling it. They do it every year. It's like the future of horror, where you're basically spitballing where you think the genre is going to go and what we can expect from it.
And we're going to ask you a couple of questions about that in just a second. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that you got a really big movie coming out next year.
Yes, I co-wrote with my writing partner, Pat Casey, the upcoming Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
What?
It was unfortunately infamous. Now I feel like the internet has forgiven us
correct,
at least as much as the internet ever does.
The teeth are perfect now.
Horror-wise, I guess you'd call it a screening series. I've been doing it. Our 9th anniversary is next month in January. It's called Friday Night Frights here in L.A., and we show horror movies all around town in L.A., usually at least one show a month.
And you have a big one coming up this Friday night.
Yes, well, it's Friday the 13th this Friday, and I couldn't pass up doing and calling it Xmas the 13th. It's just kind of an excuse to show a hodgepodge of crazy scenes from a variety of Christmas horror movies and anthology TV episodes, followed by, we can't say what it is, but it's a movie that's never screened on the big screen in America that I'm aware of.
Oh, it's very cool.
And how can people find out more information about your screening series?
Friday Night Frights on Instagram, it's Friday Night Frights LA. I'm actually forgetting what the Twitter handle is. It's like Fry Night Frights or something like
that.
Yeah,
I'll look it up real quick. I think I have it here, yeah.
And then Facebook, we don't post much, but I guess people still like Facebook events, so.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Us old people are always on Facebook.
Everybody will say maybe.
I like your Christmas sweater shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Does that have, looks like Jason on there?
Yep. Little Jason mask. I don't know if we can.
Yeah.
The thing is, when they simulate the knit sweater kind of graphic on there, it just looks like really old 8-bit.
Yeah, it looks like a
video
Atari
game.
Video
Atari, yeah. I had a Raiders game that had that exact style. Never worked. It was always broken, but yeah.
On Twitter, your Twitter handle is @frights_night. Let me make sure that's correct. It is Friday Night Fights. There you go. Tune in Friday night at 8 p.m. to hear horror stories, interviews with
the directors. That's something else.
I am completely wrong.
Don't follow that account. Okay. They're evil.
Unlike them now.
Just kidding. They're probably nice people. I don't know.
We just gave
them. I mean, we regret. We knew we were going to. Knew we would regret calling it that 9 years ago. In part because we'll do shows on like Saturdays and it's just kind of confusing. Well, now we have branding, so.
What kind of movies have you guys screened?
I mean, I have a big, long list. We've kind of, when we started out, weirdly enough, We kind of, I used to co-host it with my friend Sebastian, who over the years, the band he was in started doing more gigs and he had to kind of quietly step away from doing it.
Wait, is it a band we would know?
They're called Low Octane. I don't know.
Maybe.
Low Octane. Heavy metal. That's a great name for a band. I like that.
But weirdly, we kind of both were just spitballing and, because part of the reason we started it was now in the 9 years, a lot has changed, actually. But at the time, we felt like they would only show horror movies at all the rep cinemas. If people at home don't know what a rep cinema is, it's just a movie theater that only shows old movies for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone gets excited around Halloween and shows like mm-hmm. Nightmare on Elm Street and Night of the Living Dead. Mm-hmm. And then the moment October 31st passes, it's kind of like no one shows horror movies anymore for the rest of the year. Is what we felt at least 9 years ago.
So yeah.
Like, we want to do horror movies all year round. And initially, we've now had to do so many shows that we've kind of shown a bit of everything. But at the time, we're like, well, we don't want to show. You can see The Thing on the big screen at the new Bev like once a year. So
right.
We'll show more obscure things, and I really wanted to show a movie called Society. I don't know if you guys know that. It was the first movie directed by Brian Yuzna, who produced Reanimator and From Beyond, all of Stuart Gordon's initial stuff. But Society, I feel, is best known for those who know it. It has, like, the most intensely insane final 10 minutes. And my friend Sebastian really wanted to show the movie Body Parts.
Oh, I remember Body Parts.
Yep, that's the classic, my arm got chopped off, so I get, replacement arm, and it turns out it was the arm of a killer. Right. Now it's slowly making me... It's basically like that Treehouse of Horrors episode where Homer gets the, like, serial killer's toupee.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it starts making him want to kill.
The Simpsons is in its entirety now available on Disney Plus.
Wait, is it...
I found it.
At first, it was like all done 16 by 9. They weren't offering.
Yeah, so they're apparently changing that. I don't know if they've actually done it or not, but the biggest problem with that was that they put it all into widescreen, and in the old full screen episodes, it was cutting off the top and bottom, and you were missing key visual gags in the show. So apparently, they have pledged to remedy that.
Yes,
so.
The internet has spoken.
Yeah. Fry Night Frights. That is you guys.
We found the
Los Angeles only horror screening series bringing you the spookiest, bloodiest, bestiest of the genre all
bestiest.
Year round. Love that.
Love it.
It's beginning. Here's for this Friday. It's beginning to look a lot like Deathmas on 12/13. Don't miss our Xmas the 13th show at Join the Dynasty. Hey, can you tell me about where you guys host these at?
So we've been doing one show a month at a place called Dynasty Typewriter, mm-hmm. which is down on Wilshire in Los Angeles.
What's the cross street for that?
I don't remember.
Oh, now we gotta look
cool.
But it's kind of K-Town area.
Okay.
But they're...
That's kind of my
They're mostly a comedy venue. We're kind of the only movie thing they
do. Oh, nice.
And then we also do shows with the American Cinematheque, who have two theaters, The Egyptian in Hollywood.
Oh, you do?
And mm-hmm. The Arrow in Santa Monica.
Oh, those are... It's by the way, it's 2511 Wilshire Boulevard.
Okay.
Dynasty Time.
Oh,
forever.
Yes, of course. 2511.
Yeah. It's a very long...
It's the 2500 block. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Hey,
for those of you from out of town, Wilshire Boulevard stretches the entirety of Los Angeles east to
right
west. So,
can you tell us a little bit, and I have it in front of me, some of the other things that you have written. We're super excited about Sonic, but what else have you done?
Well, it might interest, I guess, the horror audience. I created a TV show, a very short-lived TV show that probably no one here has heard of, called Golan the Insatiable. It was an animated TV show on Fox for like a half second, and that was about a giant demon who was trapped living in a small town in Minnesota, and his only friend was like an 8-year-old girl. We basically thought of it as Kelvin and Hobbes, if Hobbes like periodically murdered people.
Oh, sure, of course.
There you go.
It's Golan the Insatiable. It was from 2013 to 2015.
We had two seasons, but only 6 episodes per season, so it was kind of like one season altogether.
No, I remember
like
that.
Clerks the cartoon series, basically.
But you did a really cool The 12 Deadly Days. Tell us about that.
That was with Blumhouse, produced it
naturally
for YouTube Premium, which at the time was called YouTube Red, because apparently no one who worked there realized that made it sound like a porno site. I think that's why they eventually hired someone who's like, hey, by the way, guys, you know there's a thing called RedTube.
oh, yeah.
Free advertising for RedTube.
Don't pretend like you didn't know, Jim.
We have free advertising for Disney Plus, RedTube, and some guy's Twitter account.
Yeah.
But 12 Deadly Days was a Christmas horror anthology. Mm-hmm. So it was 12 episodes, and you can still watch it on YouTube Premium, or if you have YouTube TV, you can do it for free. But the idea was we made it, and it would, they'd show one episode each day. 12 days leading up to Christmas.
You got to tell me, what is Sledgehammers at Dawn?
That was a movie I made in college with my friends that eventually got sort of released on DVD. So
that's cool.
Sort of released on DVD.
Yes, because we made another movie in college that did get released on DVD. And then it was such the steep rise and fall of the like DVD boom, as I feel there was like a half second in the like early mid aughts when there were enough boutique like DVD distributors. They really just wanted anything. They're like, you made a movie. Mm-hmm. How long is it? Oh, it's 90 minutes. Sure.
A lot of half seconds in Josh's life.
Yeah. So we made a movie called Hey, Stop Stabbing Me. It got released.
Hey, Stop Stabbing Me.
Yes. And then 10 years later, the steep rise and fall of the DVD, I can track by the fact that we made that movie. It didn't necessarily do well, like it made money, but like I saw websites would write about it, which to me at the time was the most exciting thing in the world. So we're like, ooh, let's quickly make another one and give it to the same distributor. And then we did a year later, and they were basically like, yeah, the market's dead. Like, we can't get people to buy our DVDs.
You should have stopped stabbing it.
Yeah, exactly. But then 10 years later, they released a 10th anniversary of Hey, Stop Stabbing Me. And we're like, here, release Sledgehammers at Dawn as a bonus feature on it. That's why I mean it got sort of released.
Right.
We snuck it into...
I feel silly asking this question, but what is Hey, Stop Stabbing Me about?
It's funny because we made it in college, and it was like us imagining the horror of graduating college. So it's about a guy who graduates from college with like a meaningless degree, and then it's just kind of a series of horrible misadventures that happen to him afterwards. But the short version is he moves into a classic house with just like a bunch of other dudes, and he starts to think that one of them is a serial killer. And kind of the joke is that it's really obvious to the audience which one is the serial killer, and that's the only one he's convinced isn't a suspect.
That's fun. Nice.
And we spent like $500 on it and shot it.
Yes!
Wow.
There it goes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That makes us all so happy. But, okay, you got to give us this one soundbite for us. So how does the writer of Please Stop Stabbing Me get onto Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie? What is it?
Well, first of all, it's Hey, Stop Stabbing Me.
Hey. Yeah. Hey, Stop Stabbing Me. No, what got you from there to this movie? That's a big jump.
Yeah, what? Well, it's kind of
I haven't seen Hey, Stop Stabbing Me, so I can't say it's a big jump.
It's a step down. Okay. No,
from a $500 budget to starring Jim Carrey, James Marsden, and Ben Schwartz, I believe, is the voice of
he is
Sonic.
The voice of Sonic the Hedgehog. Park and Rec's own Ben Schwartz.
Yeah.
I can't even think of the shortest way to answer it, but basically, I think like most things, just kind of right place, right time, which was they'd had another version of the movie they were trying to make, and then I guess all became unhappy with that. That got scrapped. So then they kind of started looking for new writers with a new take. They were trying to hire a director. And then I think the kind of series of events on it was that at the time Sony was making it, and I think they wanted Tim Miller involved, who'd done Deadpool. Mm-hmm. Tim Miller has a company called Blur that does like the cutscenes to all the Halo games and lots of ads and stuff like that. And because I think Sony wanted it to be maybe a little harder edged. Mm-hmm. Basically, after the Lego movie came out, everyone was like, ooh, that's like a kid's movie that also seems cool. How can we have like a cool kid's movie? Jeff Fowler, who is the director of Sonic, is like the number two guy at Tim's company. So like they kind of came on the project. And then Toby Asher, who's one of our producers, and he works for Neil Moritz's company, who's also a producer on it. I think he sensed that they wanted to maybe get people who were known more for adult humor.
Yeah.
And Toby was a big fan of Golan the Insatiable, and so it was just kind of like, and then also that, you know, that's not talking about the 10 zillion meetings we had to have.
Of course,
in between. Right. My favorite of which was to get Neil Maritz's sign off. We had to pitch him our idea over the phone because he was on set of Fast and Furious, whichever one they were doing at the time, in Cuba. And we had 45 minutes. And then when he gets on the phone, he said, "Hey, sorry, guys, I only have like 25 minutes now, so I'm not going to chime in at all. Just go." And so then we just like pitched over the phone. Normally you can like see people.
Yeah. So you're just talking to yourself.
Yeah, we're just talking to ourselves. It was kind of, we were expecting to get done and then be like, hello? Hello?
Right. And the call had dropped like after 5 minutes.
Beep, beep, beep.
And so then it ended and he goes, okay, great, great. I got to go. And we're just like, wow. Who knows how we thought, but he liked it. So all worked out well.
That's fantastic. Sonic the Hedgehog comes out February 14th, 2020.
Valentine's Day. Perfect.
Did you get to meet any of the cast? What?
Yeah, they shot it in Vancouver, and we went up there a couple times.
Awesome. Nice. How was Jim Carrey?
He's intense, but very funny.
Yeah?
The best thing about watching him was that you kind of expect when someone's, like, that famous. I always think of the stories of Marlon Brando on the Island of Dr. Moreau, where he didn't read the script, and he just had, like, an earpiece, and he was having, like, someone read him his lines, and then he would just repeat them. So I kind of expected to get that famous. You're kind of like, you know how movies are made, and you're just like, do the scene, and maybe you're kind of screwing up your lines, but you're like, well, we got enough takes from enough angles, you guys can piece it together.
Right.
But he, like, wanted every single setup, meaning, like, even before you would move the camera around, he wanted to be able to get through every scene beginning to end without like screwing up at all. And I'm kind of like, I'm like, I wouldn't do that.
Wow.
And no one cares about me. But
because I heard he used to do a lot of takes, like just to get the best comedic performance. Did they do like a lot of takes? Like I heard some people that would be on set would like, you do like 15 takes or something.
I mean, maybe that's part of just he wants to get it so that he thinks it's great. Which is cool, though, because then that means, like, from every single angle, he's delivering complete A-game performance.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was really happy we got him because he's kind of the best part of the movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jake, you were saying something?
Oh, no, I was just saying, like, I can imagine, like, so he's doing the scene, and he's walking out of his light, out of a shot, and then, you know, he's still in character. That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I know that I was a member of the internet. When the first trailer came out, when was that? 6 years ago, it seems like.
What?
And
it does seem like a long time ago.
But the first trailer for it came out, what, 8 months ago? Maybe a year ago or something like that? Do you remember, Josh?
April, May?
Yeah, it was forever ago. And the original design that was so, let's say, controversial.
Mm-hmm.
I believe John Oliver said, "What would it look like if a hedgehog had the face of a corpse?" I believe that's what he said.
It's spot up on the screen.
And to be honest, as a guy who grew up playing Sonic the Hedgehog on Sega Genesis, I saw that, and I think my reaction was very similar to the rest of the internet, which was something along the lines of, "Oh Jesus!" But what was really impressive to me is, they didn't take the line of like, well, this is the movie and everybody hates everything and screw you guys. It was like, okay, let's take it back and improve it. Let's make it a little bit more along the line.
I was so impressed, yeah.
And then they came back and they came out with the same movie. They just redesigned the Sonic character.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to go see this movie 5 times now.
Yeah.
Because I'm able to just see Sonic the Hedgehog as Sonic the Hedgehog in this trailer. I like James Marsden. Some people don't like him.
That's
the guy.
How do you not like James Marsden?
I don't know. People like
And how do you not like James Marsden?
And I think Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik is the most brilliant casting move ever. I don't know. Do you know who the casting director was on this? Because
I'm not sure. I feel like that's the kind of thing I should know, but don't. Yeah. It's okay. Most people don't know who wrote movies. So.
But he's the writer. He writes it, then they threw him under the bus.
Yeah. That's tough. That's truer than we like to admit. Anyway.
Casting by Nicole Aguilera, Gene McCarthy, and Leslie Wu.
Okay. Very cool. Well, excellent.
And he's classic, like, 90s Jim Carrey.
Oh, he is.
That's the most exciting part.
Yes. Awesome.
That is exciting.
Well, good on that casting crew, on the casting director crew on that. But, yeah, and then but it just looks – it looks so – as a guy who grew up, and again,
look at
what we –
look at this Jim Carrey
it's
shot.
It's what we've talked about in the past, the nostalgia factor, but also bringing it into kind of a current thing, and I'm sure your writing is a lot of that. Did you guys go back and, like, play some Sonic the Hedgehog to research this?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my, like, present to myself when we got the job, is I immediately bought Well, at first I looked up and I'm like, how can you still play the games? And I find out Nintendo DS had like a cartridge that just had the first four games on it.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm going to go buy a Nintendo DS just so I can play Sonic 2 and 3 over and over again.
I think Nintendo bought out Sega. Is that right?
Cool. Yes.
They didn't buy it out. They just... Sega stopped making consoles, so they're kind of like, well, we still want to make games,
though. So they contracted or something like that.
But it is funny that now, there's a really interesting book called Console Wars that's about the rise and fall of the Genesis, or not the Genesis specifically, but Sega at that time. The fact that they actually started beating Nintendo, and then their company kind of like, I wouldn't say it imploded, it's still around doing stuff, but they stopped making consoles.
And they're going to do a documentary about how they're all buried in the desert, right?
No, that's E.T. with a toy. Dude, I had a Sega Dreamcast, and it was ahead of its time, and nobody recognized it for that.
Dreamcast was great.
Dreamcast was awesome.
I had that too, yeah.
So
House of the Dead.
Did you ever play Typing of the Dead? It was House of the Dead. So the Dreamcast, maybe for educational games, it came with a thing you could plug in that was just a keyboard, like a big, chunky computer keyboard.
So you're practicing.
And so you plug that in to play House of the Dead, but instead of shooting, it would put sentences up on the screen, and you had to type the whole sentence to shoot the zombie.
Oh, my God.
It was the weirdest thing ever.
That's hilarious.
Typing of the Dead.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's fantastic. By the way, showing all these great clips and pictures up here, we have somebody in the booth. His name is Ryan Nielsen. Ryan is our engineer and producer for the show. How you doing, Ryan?
What's going on, y'all? I am just so thrilled to be hearing all this about Sonic the Hedgehog because I, too, am a massive fan of the game. And, yeah, this new trailer, it looks awesome. I'm a massive Jim Carrey fan. Cannot wait to see it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ryan. So and we'll be poking into the booth here and seeing what Ryan thinks about things from time to time here. But what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and ask you a question.
Sure.
We're going to try to bring it a little bit back to horror, which is you had this panel when you talked about the future of horror. If you can give us your brief synopsis of kind of... Brief synopsis. I don't want to hear everything you have to say. No. What do you think? We are about to hit 2020 in just a couple of weeks here. What can we expect in the way of horror?
Like, as far as the subgenres, I keep thinking people are going to get sick of ghosts and haunted house movies, but they don't.
Yeah.
Eventually, we're going to have Conjuring, 800. The main thing that I, at least, am seeing just kind of behind the scenes that'll be interesting is, it's bad in some ways for filmmakers, but also good, is budgets keep getting smaller and smaller of, like, what, we're still going to get, like, the It-style big studio movies, but in part because Blumhouse has had such success with their, like, $5 million and under budgets, now you're seeing a lot of, like, my friends who make like indie horror movies, like $300,000 budgets. Yeah, like they just keep getting smaller and smaller, and it's hard to do stuff with like union people. What's interesting about that though is I guess people are going to have to get really inventive in what kind of movies they make. And then also, I think Hollywood's kind of embracing the idea that, oh, there's a market for diversity and representation. Both in a trying to be inclusive and, let's be honest, just like dollar signs away. Yeah. People, they're kind of like, oh, Wonder Woman did good. Captain Marvel did good. Maybe people will want to see horror movies made by women.
Imagine that.
I think there's now a lot of opportunities for people to just kind of make their own thing and find audiences. I mean, further niching is sometimes not great because it gets harder and harder to get something in front of everybody's eyeballs, but
I think that creates a really fertile ground though for new ideas to come out because there's so many creative ideas out there and in any genre, the horror genre not excluded, you tend to see rehashing of the same idea over and over again. And I think especially in our modern age of so much content and so many ways to get it out there, and you can film a whole movie on your phone, there's going to be a lot
Jake
of...
did that?
I did do that.
Yeah.
Did do that.
Yeah. It did not have as good of a title as Hey, Stop Stabbing Me. I would rename it.
Yeah. It was
Don't
Please Stab
My
Stop
Cat.
Poking Me. It was weird. No, but, you know, that creates a really fertile ground for some really unique ideas to come out. I think there's probably people out there who have something, you know, in the works that we've never thought of or heard of before. Mm-hmm. That's going to come out and you know, maybe change the game. Because you see short films on YouTube, and somebody sees it and they're like, holy moly, that's a great idea. And then it's, you know, 2 years later, it's a feature film.
But I have to ask you, because you guys really came up this. A lot of times when I hear smaller budgets, sometimes I'm like, yeah, because I think these giant bloated budgets make for these giant bloated movies, which are not that great. But as a writer, your opinion on having smaller budgets, it really does it makes it hard for you to eke out a living as a writer in Hollywood, right?
It makes it hard for people to, like, for that to really be their job, mm-hmm. which I'm sure people with crappy normal jobs are just like, man, boo-hoo. But at the same time, it's kind of hard to actually create anything if you don't have time to create it.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's funny because in Friday Night Frights, one thing I see a lot, because we're showing older movies, I'll maybe show a movie from like 1980 and be talking, maybe the director will be there and they'll be talking like, oh, we had no money. And I'm just like, oh, what was the budget? And they'll be like, oh, we only had like $900,000. But I'm like, but that's in 1980 terms. Yeah. You know, because you used to have to shoot on film. So movies kind of, even the cheapest movie had to cost above, frankly, more than they're spending on movies now. Mm-hmm. But that's why even like some of the dumpiest like old 80s slasher movies, in some ways they still just seem more like a movie than when you watch like a lower budget thing now. And that's because, yeah, you can just take, I can just be like, boom, we're making a movie now, mm-hmm. you guys. And if you
chopping
saw it right
mall.
Then,
chopping mall.
By
chopping.
The way, I just saw that on the big screen. Chopping yeah. mall.
What'd you see? Would you see what
the Egyptian.
Yeah. I saw that was over there.
Nice.
Good movie.
For those who don't know Chopping Mall, it's teenagers spending the night in a mall that has high-security robots that can become sentient after they're struck by lightning.
Yes.
Good.
Because when you get struck by lightning, that's when the movies...
AI becomes sentient.
Yeah.
It's science.
All right. So,
speaking of videos people watch on YouTube, didn't we all just recently see something on YouTube?
Yes, we just watched Ghostbusters. So instead, we do not have 3 minutes of scary news this week. We have 3 minutes of reactions to the Ghostbusters trailer. Guys, what'd you guys think?
Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yes, Ghostbusters Afterlife, which comes out next summer 2020,
directed by Jason Reitman,
yes.
Ivan Reitman's son.
Did this room just get slimed? Did it just turn green on us?
Oh, it just went slimy. Ryan is the
slimy.
Best.
Look at that. Perfect.
By the way, quick side plug. There's the series on Netflix, The Toys That Made Us. They've now released The Movies That Made Us.
And I was watching that the other day.
One of the episodes is about Ghostbusters, and it's incredible. That movie almost didn't get made. But... anyway, Josh, your reaction to the Ghostbusters trailer?
Well, you know, I didn't really need a new Ghostbusters movie, but I was very surprised watching it. And then I was, you know, for a while, you're like, did I click the right trailer?
Right.
Like, how is this a Ghostbusters movie?
When it begins, it's like, here's a heartfelt drama about cleaning up Grandpa's farm.
To me, that have a novelty, because they already tried to do another, just like, let's capture the magic. And I just think it's unfortunate. I don't think the new one was a good movie, and I feel bad that the jerks on the internet get to be like, see, we were right. It's because it's all women. And it's like, well, that wasn't the problem. It just wasn't that.
Right.
It wasn't a great movie. But it's also like, how can you get that cast? Again, that was like lightning in a bottle, the first one.
Right.
So I like that they're just kind of like, let's do something completely different. And the main thing I like about it is one thing I always said about the first movie, part of what I think is good about it that the recent one didn't have, is that the first movie, it wouldn't have been successful, but you could have made a serious horror movie of that plot.
Yeah.
Like all the plot points work as a horror movie, and then you just add these funny characters. So I at least like that this one like looks a little spooky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. For those of you who haven't seen it, you can check it out. But none of the original cast were featured in this, and from what we have heard...
Although they did show footage, which kind of counts in a small
way. Well,
they
showed footage from the 80s.
Yeah.
We went to the 35th anniversary celebration over on the Sony lot, and we heard, you know, Jason and Ivan sitting together talking about the movie and the new one. And people are asking, so Bill Murray, yep, he has read the script.
That's all they could say.
Sigourney
they'd be like, Weaver, yep. Read the script.
But at that same time, Sigourney had announced, yes, we're in it. We are in it. So I wonder how much that the original characters will be in there.
Yeah. I think the kid, probably Finn Wolfhard's going to walk up a mountain, and he's going to, Bill Murray's going to turn around in a robe, and he's going to hold out the blaster or the stick, and then that's where it's going to cut for the next one.
That's my untested nuclear reactor on his back.
That's right, yeah.
I watched this trailer this morning, and I watched it again just now before the show with you guys, and I felt much more excited the second time watching it. The first time watching it, again, yes, the first 30 seconds of this, you're like, is this, right. This isn't, I'm watching the wrong trailer.
This is the ad before the trailer.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I was like, am I getting oversaturated with Finn Wolfhard now?
I know.
Because
he's everywhere.
He's everywhere. I watched Stranger Things. I watched it. I watched it too. Was there something else he was in?
I'm sure.
And then I'm like, and now he's in Ghostbusters. And I like the kid, but I think I'm seeing too much of him. But again, now the second time I've watched the trailer, I'm like, okay, yeah. Because it's like, but then, you know, there's Paul Rudd in it, and
yep.
A bearded Paul Rudd.
A bearded, but well, he's been bearded before.
Although I was getting kind of a Gremlins vibe, you know, in Gremlins, the main guy, like, takes Gizmo to that, like, high school teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Same kind of vibe.
Oh, yeah.
And then it seems like that scene later in the trailer where he opens it up and it does a little thing. I mean, it seems like he's in more of the movie than the teacher in Gremlins
is.
Yeah.
And that teacher does not end up well in Gremlins.
No. Right. He gets gremlined.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like I'm not 100% sure, but I think we saw Slimer in the trailer.
Did we?
Yeah, watching it the second time. When she's in the, what do they call it?
The gunner seat.
The
Ecto-1 gunner seat, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm excited. And speaking of Gremlins, dun, 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 great segue. We're going to start talking about our favorite scary movies to watch at Christmas in just a second. But before we do, very quick, we got our bulletin board, which I'm going to go over right now. December 13th. By the way, we always like to give people a list of things they can actually do to experience their favorite fandoms in horror movies. For example, December 13th. Xmas the 13th is right here.
A Dynasty Typewriter in Los Angeles.
And to find out more information again, where do they go?
Just go to Instagram, Friday Night Frights LA, Twitter, whatever the handle you read off earlier that I already forgot.
And we're going to share it. We're going to share it here on the page where you guys are watching this video tonight. Also, December 13th is the premiere of Blumhouse's new Black Christmas, which if we have some time, we will talk. Get your thoughts on have you heard anything about it?
I am friends with one of the co-writers of it, so I'm hoping it does well.
It looks fan-freaking-tastic. All right, so December 14th through 15th, there's, speaking of Finn, StrangerCon in Atlanta, Georgia celebrates the TV show Stranger Things January 17th through the 19th, HauntCon and Halloween and Party Expo in New Orleans. It's where the haunt community gathers, all things haunted industry related. And then January 25th, there's something called Vet City Con. It's in Bowling Green, Kentucky. It's a horror-themed Comic-Con. So that's what we have coming up in the next couple of months. There's so many more. But what we would like to do is we are going to start talking right now about our favorite scary movies to watch at Christmas time. And we are going to begin this segment of our show with Carrie Lane.
Hi, I'm Carrie Lane.
Hey, Carrie.
Are you looking for something a little different to watch this holiday season? Tired of the cliche movie that kind of has the same plot line that you watch every Christmas time? Well, I've got just the thing for you. There are actually quite a few horror Christmas movies. There are numerous films entitled Black Christmas. There's the classics such as Gremlins and many more. I wanted to tell you about a few that you might not have heard of. So, in no particular order, first up is Rare Exports. It's from Finland and it is so fun. Came out in 2010, and it's about a young boy who, with his friend, noticed this kind of mining expedition in their small town, and it's not quite going as planned, and they're not quite digging up what you might think. The young boy thinks it's actually the grave of Santa Claus. Not quite. The young boy, Pietri, gets help from his father and his father's co-workers, and things just snowball from there. This is one of those, the less you know, the better, because it's fun to see it as it happens. I highly recommend Rare Exports. It's super fun. There's blood, there's gore, and it's just a really cool horror Christmas movie. Also, another one that's a little on the darker, scary side is A Christmas Horror Story. Now, this is kind of a interwoven anthology-style film where there's three separate stories that all kind of intermix. It has malevolent spirit zombie elves. Yes, zombie elves. And a Krampus. This one's also a bloody, fun, gory, scary. The effects are really cool, and it's neat to see the kind of different stories taking on different wonderful elements of Christmas. So if you're looking for a scary and gory Christmas movie, check out A Christmas Horror Story. Now, something a little on the lighter side, but still with that aspect of horror, I highly recommend Anna and the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
It's a zombie musical Christmas movie. All rolled into one. So this movie is about Anna and her friends at school in their small town. It gets plagued by zombies, as they do. They do a really good job of blending from the action and sometimes scary moments of what's going on into bursting into song. And they're also really great catchy songs as well. So if you're looking for something a little more on the lighter side, a musical and still Christmas themed, with still some gore and blood and guts and mayhem, check out Anna and the Apocalypse. Those are a few of my holiday horror favorites. What are your favorite horror movies for the holidays? Please leave a comment down below and let me know. Thank you so much for watching. My name is Carrie Lane. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks,
Carrie.
Oh, man, I always love hearing from Carrie. Carrie's one of the biggest fans of horror. All right, let's jump right in it. Ben, we'll start over you, and let's just kind of go around the table and see if some people have some... What are some of your favorite scary movies to watch at Christmas time?
Well, I always like the classics like Gremlins. One of my newer favorites is the Krampus movie that came out a few years back. As a man of German descent, I've always been fascinated with the Krampus tradition. And it's not like... People are like, oh, it's German. Well, it's a very specific region of Germany that has the whole Krampus thing. By the way, December 5th was Krampusnacht, so...
They had a big festival here in L.A.
Yeah.
This past weekend.
So it's just a really fun, fairly high budget for a horror movie, Christmas horror movie, and it one thing I really love about it is it kind of has that Euro ending of despair that I kind of appreciate. You know, a lot of times with horror movies, particularly in the United States, you know, the final girl finally wins against the slasher or et cetera, et cetera. And European movies so often have an ending where it's like, the villain won anyway, you know, like, and so without giving anything necessarily away, there is that kind of despair ending to the Krampus movie, which I really appreciate. And I think really, to use a phrase, ties it up in a nice bow.
Fantastic.
But it's a really fun movie that uses a lot of really fun Christmas imagery and turns it on its head.
Nice.
And it's just creepy and somewhat gory and stuff.
Josh, do you have a couple for us?
I'm a fan. I enjoy movies that sometimes aren't actually that good.
Sure.
An example of that would be a late 80s horror movie called Elves.
Remember Elves.
Yes. And it stars Dan Haggerty, who people of a certain age might remember as Grizzly Adams.
Right.
Who looks kind of like Santa to begin with. But it is just a weird, weird movie, but it has the great kind of dumb, hooky premise. Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
It's a really good VHS cover, actually.
They're not working for Santa anymore.
No, working for the Nazis. Yeah. This was the elves were created by Nazis as an experiment to be like, because they were like the perfect soldier because they don't need to eat and they're magic. And I'm just like, well, I don't know how you can really genetically create them if they're magic.
Right.
But
well, the filmmakers created them by having one puppet.
Yeah, it's called Elves, but it should have just been called Elf because there's only one.
Along with a hand that sometimes reaches in.
Also, going the... Krampus was the American movie, but it's not quite a Krampus story. It's called Sint, S-I-N-T. It's a Dutch movie. I think Sint is Saint. But that was like, again, it's kind of Krampus adjacent, maybe you'd call it, just about like, I kind of think it's like a flashback where we see that the original Saint Nick was like just this horrible asshole kind of tyrant. And so the villagers, you know, killed him. And he's basically like, I'm going to come back every 32 years to, you know, fuck shit up. And boy, does he ever. There's a great sequence where the cops are, like, speeding in a car, shooting at St. Nick, who's, like, he rides a horse in the movie, and he's galloping across the roof, and they're shooting at him.
Nice.
And it's kind of the same, that European grim quality.
There you go.
Really pervades the film.
Jake, what do you think?
It's a Wonderful Life. It's one of the most horrifying existential films.
Evil One!
Yes.
It is not so really. Sad.
No. I'll give a shout-out to Gremlins, the classic Christmas one.
Mogwire.
Chris Columbus was inspired to write this movie, apparently, because he heard, when he was living in New York, rodents running around in the air ducts of his apartment, and just, like, imagine all these things happening at night. So that just kind of spawned the idea of these critters running around and... Not to be confused with the movie Critters.
I was just about to say the same thing.
These gremlins running around and causing havoc. And, like, this is one of those fun... It's kind of one of those fun things where it's, like, the mythology of the monster is almost, like, the development of how it works is... Like, you have a xenomorph's life process taking place. And, like, right below that is the Mogwai gremlin life process. And I think the only thing that kind of doesn't quite bridge that is the whole what counts as after midnight question, which I
know. I know.
Is addressed later on in the superior sequel, Gremlins 2, The New Batch, which is a wonderful film. But
it's always 5 o'clock somewhere. It's always midnight somewhere.
That's right. But, yeah, you have a... Always watch it. That should probably be on the next The Movies That Made Us, I imagine.
Oh, yeah,
season
absolutely.
2. I bet they could do Gremlins.
Cheeseman.
Now, I have to admit, I haven't seen a ton of, like, Christmas, like, horror movies. And I've just, you know, saw Gremlins again, which I think I'd only seen once in my life before. And then last year I saw Nightmare Before Christmas for the first time, which was fun. And I want to keep watching more of these. So when I was younger, what me and my friends would do, we'd go into Blockbuster Video and we'd look for the most crazy type movies they could see. And a couple of those were actually Christmas movies. Jack Frost, Jack Frost 2, which was in Hawaii, and The Ginger Dead Man with, I think, Gary Busey did the voice of it. So
The Ginger Dead Man?
The Ginger Dead Man. So we were very entertained to watch these just very like schlocky, kind of fun horror versions of these characters and stuff. So if you haven't seen Jack Frost, especially Jack Frost 2, I found even more entertaining because it was just so bizarre.
Not to be confused with a heartwarming Michael Keaton film also called Jack Frost.
Which is also horrifying in its own way.
Hey, as we kind of come towards the end of the show, Ryan, do you have any scary movies that you kind of enjoyed watching at Christmas time?
I'm going to go with the OG Black Christmas from 1974, written by Roy Moore. Absolutely. That is the horror Christmas movie I will go with. That and Christmas at the Cranks, which is horrifying in a few different ways, especially towards the end there where they just are like, wow, our kid's gone. And then she comes back, and they got to save Christmas. So those are my two.
All right. And let me throw some out there, see what you guys think about these. Silent Night, Deadly Night. Have you guys seen it?
I have not seen all of them.
How many of them are there? Is that all the one with the Santa's arm out the chimney?
Well, that's the first one. There's at least five, because I've shown the fifth movie.
Yeah?
That's with Mickey Rooney, where he is a toy maker who makes his own son. So, like, he makes, like, a person-sized toy.
Pinocchio
It's kind of
style.
A Frankie. Yeah, it's like Pinocchio meets Frankenstein.
Oh, my God. The first one. Five-year-old Billy is placed in an orphanage after witnessing the murder of his parents at the hands of a killer in a Santa suit in the beginning of Silent Night, Deadly Night. When Billy is released into the world at age 18, he gets a job at a toy store where he's asked to dress as Santa for Christmas.
Trigger.
There you
triggering.
Go. There you go. What about Christmas Evil?
A.K.A. You Better Watch Out. That's enough. That movie has a really crazy ending that's kind of one part Repo Man ending, one part Thelma and Louise ending.
Mm-hmm.
Not spoiler alert, I guess, but the Santa killer ends up flying off into space in a van. I think it's maybe like not really happening. It's just like what he's thinking as he's like plummeting to his doom. I've never fully understood the ending, but...
Nightmare Before Christmas?
Love it.
Yeah. Eyes Wide Shut.
Is that a Christmas movie?
Apparently.
It's on the list.
I admit I've never watched Eyes Wide Shut. I was also pretty young when it came out, so understandably.
I mean, yeah, I guess I remember there's snow in it.
Yeah, and he runs around at Christmas time and does bad thing.
Right. Oh, right, because he's with that girl who's maybe wearing a Santa hat.
I don't remember.
I have a question.
No, she's not. She's wearing a furry hat.
I'm sure this has happened, but has anybody... somebody's made a movie called Scary Christmas, or We Wish You a Scary Christmas, or something along those lines, right?
Gosh, I don't
they
know.
Maybe they haven't.
Copyright. Yeah. Copyright. I'm writing
billion
that.
$1 billion
Josh
idea.
And I are writing that together.
All right, but as we wrap up, guys, here, any other movies that deserve to be on our list? By the way, Carrie gave some great films. Any other...
Did we mention Dead of Night? Because it's on one of these lists, which looks super creepy, and it's a 1945 movie with like a ventriloquist kind of type thing.
That's an anthology movie. Yeah. So the ventriloquist dummy segment is Christmas related.
All right. Yeah. Anything else on our Christmas list here?
Forgive me. Yes, there's one movie that is Christmas and has ghosts, and that's every version of A Christmas Carol you watch.
Right.
That's, yeah.
You know, I was reading it, and we need to wrap up too, but I was reading recently that until Halloween became really popular in the United States in like the late 1800s, early 1900s, Christmas was considered a holiday to tell ghost stories and scary, horrifying stories. Like, that was just part of Christmas tradition. And as Halloween kind of took over as the scary holiday, that tradition kind of died out for Christmas. So it really is traditional to tell horror stories during Christmas.
That's why Andy Williams sang about it every year.
Scary ghost
Christmas
stories.
Specials.
Yeah.
And Tales of the Glories. As we finish the show tonight, I always get a tongue tied. Could you give us any thoughts about what we could expect with your friend's movie coming out this next week, Black Christmas? How's it different from the original?
I mean, they kind of...
Don't give away
any stuff. They show stuff in the trailer, like that... Because for those who haven't seen the first one, you don't really ever learn much about the killer.
Right.
It's a pretty straightforward slasher movie. This one goes into a whole... I don't know if you'd say full-on cult, but like...
There's some mythology behind
it. Yeah, there's some shenanigans going on this campus. So I think that was... You know, they already remade it once, so I think they were kind of like, where can we really break this open and do something people aren't expecting?
They had a group of female students are stalked by a stranger during their Christmas break. That is, until the young sorority pledges discover that the killer is part of an underground college conspiracy. It's right there on IMDb. It's like, but this is a female forward feminist rewrite of the original Black Christmas, right?
I mean,
without giving anything away.
Yeah.
Without giving anything away.
Yeah. Yeah. By Blumhouse, go see it this coming weekend. But first, check out your event. What's your event again as we wrap up?
Xmas the 13th.
Xmas the 13th.
I'm also going to plug my podcast, Best Movies Never Made, which super quick way to plug it since we're trying to wrap up, is my friend Steve made a documentary called Jodorowsky's Dune, which was about an attempt in the 70s to make Dune. It's a great documentary. The podcast is just an extension of that, where each episode we talk about an interesting movie that almost but didn't get made.
They can find it where?
That is on the Electric Surge Network, but it's on all iTunes, Spotify, anything. Just search Best Movies Never Made.
Thank you guys so much for watching the Scare Guys show this week. Where can we find everybody?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at JT Hummus.
Look for me at Friday Night Frights LA on Instagram, Best Movies Never Made on Instagram, or just Josh S. Miller on Instagram. I like Instagram.
Yeah, there you go. My name is Ben Cleaver, BenKlieWer on all social media. And catch me in a blink if you'll blink and you'll miss it role in Seaberg in theaters now.
Whoa,
yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
And I'm Cheeseman on the Couch. You can find me on Twitter at CheeseOnCouch and on thescareguy.com.
Everybody, Christmas is scary enough. Be nice to your family. Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Or scare them.
Or scary.
Yeah, tell them
scary
a ghost story.
Christmas.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.